The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Well, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk Rachan Kai FM, where we always try to understand all this craziness and madness that's going on in the AI world, which more and more it seems to become, and technology in general and how that affects you, impacts you, and just a couple of things you should worry about. But we're going to be talking about some really interesting stuff today, but kicking it off, one of my pet hates has been this whole story of taking your driver's license out when you get to a building, when you get to a apartment block, and then some random guy takes a machine, scans your driver's license, takes a copy of your car license and lets you drive in. Question is, where does that data go? How long is it kept for? What do they do with it? Because your driver's license has got all your information. It's got your ID number. It's probably got all your details, your address, everything that the government has. And now suddenly it's being stored on some database somewhere for some reason that none of us know about. And finally, the information regulator, chaired by Panzi Tlakula, they are looking at finalizing a guidance note which effectively will stop or rather regulate the amount of information that is kept and held. Because according to them, theoretically, in order to gain access, they need a name, a registration number, and pretty much that is it. They should not be scanning or doing stuff that keeps this sort of information around. But as part of that whole thing, and this is part of what they call the POPIA Act, the Protection of Information Act, very similar to the GDPR Act in Europe. And interestingly, in Europe, you are absolutely not allowed to take anybody's details and information and store it anywhere. They really do have teeth in their regulator, and it would be unheard of for someone random to scan an official ID, government ID, and then store it somewhere for the purposes of who knows what down the road. So they've done some serious research into this. They've looked at it, and no question we're going to see some changes coming up. It may, in some cases, slow things down a little, but other than taking your name down and scanning your or just a picture of your driver's license, not driver's license, of your number plate, they shouldn't really ask you for all this information. It's, as I say, a real pet hate of mine, because I've even been denied entry. I left my driver's license accidentally at home, drove all the way to a meeting. They wouldn't let me in the building. No driver's license, no access. I mean, have you ever? Anyway, but that's just one of those little pet things that I've long moaned and groaned about. And it's quite fun when you ask them, well, do you know where the data goes? And they look at you like, are you out of your head? But as part of the whole crackdown, and finally, the information regulator and the rules around POPIA, also another thing that is just a major irritation is the sheer amount of phone calls you get in a day, in a month, in a week, marketing phone calls. Now, a lot of the marketeer companies have said that, well, phone calls don't really constitute electronic communication. But however, they're phoning you on your cell phone, certainly electronic. They're phoning you from a call center full of electronics. I mean, that's got to be the lamest excuse I've ever heard for driving you nuts with odd phone calls for new insurance products and whatever else they're trying to sell. But anyway, they've now taken the POPIA crowd have taken some advice from IT experts, and they come to the conclusion that as far as the regulator is concerned, a telephone call is an electronic communication. That took a lot of work, a lot of hard thinking, I'm sure. But finally, you should, and according to the rules, you should only get one phone call initially. Hello, I'm phoning from so-and-so. Do I have your permission to call you with products and services from this company? Not from any company or in general, but from this company. If you say yes, they're then authorized to offer you something, explain something, tell you something. And then they actually should ask you, do you consent to receive further information? At that point, you can be randomly called. But it's become a huge challenge for me anyway. And what's clever is these again, using technology, they randomize the phone numbers. So you use a blocker, and it does stop some of them. It does collect some of them, but it rotates the numbers. And then you see this weird missed call. You try phone it back. It goes beep, 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 not accessible. That's pretty weird. But again, watch out for all of this. If you really are tired of all these crazy things, do tell them that you do not authorize them. They theoretically should put your name on a list, and you should not receive any further calls. If you really bothered about it, go and have a look at the website for the Papier crowd, and you will find that there's a complaint line, and you can actually lodge a complaint and get things done. But for example, their first offender, they've actually issued a notice to Rams Consulting, which is Rams Couriers and everything. I think I'll just check that, but it's called Rams Consulting, and they got an enforcement notice to stop direct marketing to individual who had received countless direct marketing messages, and you cannot for many times opt out. So that for me is excellent news. I think it's definitely going to cut back on a lot of the nonsense and everything going on. Now, here's something really interesting, and it's back into the AI space. A lot of talk right now, a lot of new phones, in fact, all the new top-end phones, all the new released phones from Samsung, Oppo, and many of the other manufacturers are coming with AI baked solidly into the operating system. Certainly, you're going to see it in the new iPhone coming quite soon. Apparently, the launch in South Africa, at least, Europe are going to not be so lucky. Who knows when they'll get it? But for the moment, America, South Africa, and many other territories are going to get Apple Intelligence or Apple AI. Very clever naming. But in round about mid to late October. But Google phones have had it pretty much since the initial launch in January from Samsung, and Circle to Search and so many other AI functionalities. But what a lot of us don't realize is that Vodafone or Vodacom in South Africa have a lot of their own devices. They also have a lot of their sort of apps and everything that runs on a device that automatically, again, a little bit of an annoyance. Sometimes you get all these apps when you log on to your brand new Vodacom enabled phone. And a lot of these apps are now going to be infused with generative AI intelligence tools, as the Vodafone Group, which is the holding company for Vodacom, have partnered with Google to bring all these cloud services, these generative artificial intelligence tools, and as a wrapper, something we'll talk about a little later, cybersecurity to all its customers in Europe and Africa. And they've signed a 10-year expansion of the existing partnership. And as I said, a lot of us don't realize how many inexpensive smartphones and other phones and services that a Vodafone actually deal direct or create and sell directly. So not only will this work on any mobile phone that's connected to the Vodacom or Vodafone network, it'll also work on their own phones. And there's just no question that AI is becoming more and more prominent. I know many people that don't even use Google Search. Again, something that I'll talk about a little later. And they simply use ChatGPT or one of the AI searches to do their normal everyday searching, unless you're really looking for a specific, you know, information about a specific thing. Google Search tends to just give you lists and lists of similar, a lot of intelligence does go into it. But AI gives you a much more chatty, informative view of things. And it does, because of the very nature of how it works, look at many different websites and distill that information. So it saves a ton of time in you doing all that by going to multiple websites looking for the information you're looking for, whereas the AI will do that. But simply put, AI and AI search is going to become more and more part of everything we do. Interesting to see that Vodacom have signed up right from the get-go, and many of the other telecommunications companies are going to probably do the same, because I saw at World Mobile in February some phones that don't actually have apps anymore. Everything runs through the super app from, let's say, Vodacom, and the search and everything you want to do is all wrapped up in that, and it's all driven by AI. So expect to see more and more of that. They're not individual. The phone essentially is just a portal to their online services, which in event many are, but you don't download anything, you don't have a multiple diversity of a million apps, you don't have a whole lot of stuff running on your phone. So watch the space. We're going to see, I think, a lot of change with AI and Google and Apple and the way that they bake the whole AI things into their phones. Anyway, on that note, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and I will be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Now, moving on to a topic that, again, has just expanded so intensely over the last couple of months. And like all technologies, the growth is pretty much exponential. I mean, it's nearly 2 years since the first launch in November of 2022 of the initial AI with ChatGPT. And since then, it has been weaving itself more and more into everything that we do. And the business models around AI have evolved enormously. AI as a platform, as a product, as a service, as a methodology of doing pretty much everything has slowly embedded itself into the very PCs. The launch of Windows PCs with AI built in, the dedicated AI key, more and more. The phones that we use, the items that we use, every single thing is being infused with what they call artificial intelligence. It's essentially not artificial and it's not intelligence. So it just is a nice catchy ring to it, and that's what people remember, and that's what we're going to carry on calling it. But machine learning and smart algorithms are pretty much changing everything. But one of the consequences of this is that Google has been as one of the major players. Obviously, OpenAI, who developed ChatGPT, very closely working with Microsoft on some levels. Of course, we mustn't forget Meta with their Meta AI, which is available in South Africa, not in many countries around the world, but you can actually go to Meta AI and check that one out. And that's the Llama model. So pretty slick, pretty smart. X has got its own model. So there's just more than enough. But what has been bubbling under for a while, and in fact, in Europe, Google paid a massive 6.5 billion euro fine for antitrust interventions. In other words, they were saying that Google was anti-competitive, and they paid a fine and promised to fix things, which they sort of have. And essentially, Google is under enormous pressure. But in the past 3 weeks, American federal judges have ordered Google to open up its lucrative app store to rivals, pretty much what happened in Europe with Apple's app store. And the Justice Department said that it may force the tech giant to spin off some of its services to remedy its monopolization of online search. Now, the problem with this is, and speak, you know, going through many of the articles written around this, looking at the responses from Google itself, the real truth right now is that many of the AI models, certainly Google's AI model and the other AI models, are fairly agnostic to where the data comes from. Obviously, any AI model needs to be trained on tons and tons and tons of data. And that data has to come from a database somewhere. And if ever, or the internet in general, if ever there was a company that indexes, manages, and quietly delivers the world of the internet and all the websites and everything that's stored everywhere to you, is Google. And Google has become synonymous with search. There are many other search engines, some of them proprietary. Microsoft, with all its power, has been working for years and years on Bing search to try to compete. But the gold standard, the trusted partner for, I would say, over 90% of all searches that go on in the world is Google. And what they've done is they've used that data that they've collected through searches, because every time you type in a search, that is gets stored, and the results get stored, and your behavior gets stored, and that gets analyzed, and they start building up enormously good models, because most people have to log in before they use Google, the same as Microsoft. You have to log in before you use their services. And essentially, Google do not have a paid model. There's no Google paid tier, unlike Microsoft, unlike Meta in some cases, unlike X, if you want the full service, you've got to pay for it. Google has essentially been free for many years. Why? They make their money from marketing, from advertising. So when you search, a million ad comes up, and people click through these ads, people do business through these ads, and obviously you pay Google for the privilege. Google paid search has become a massive business model for lots and lots of people. So out there, there's an old story that if you're not paying for a product, you are the product. And Facebook have done exactly the same thing, obviously, with billions of people all signed into Facebook. They collect a ton of model money, a ton of information and data, and turn that into money through advertising. And that is essentially the Google model. And what they've done is spun up some incredibly useful services, which are nominally free. I mean, who does not use Google Maps? Everyone that I know, everybody that has a mobile phone uses Google Maps or versions of it, Waze or something else. And many, many, even when you're using a ride service, whatever it is, Uber, doesn't matter. Running in the background, the mapping provider is often Google. They charge. And one of the things that created this backlash is that Google are being paid by Apple $20 billion a year in order just to use or to make Google the default search on iPhone. Now, not on Chrome or Android, but Google is the default on iPhone. Google asks you many times. So in many cases, based on what's happened over the years with Microsoft and others, there seems to be a very definitive change coming and a target of, let's see how we can make this a little bit more fair. The problem for most people, and this is what's so important, is that the servers, the amount of money that it costs to do this in the back end, the servers, the platforms, all the information. I mean, there are little vans traveling around the world scanning roads continuously. How do you think Google Maps can offer 3D overview modes? They've got satellite imaging. They've got physical cars driving around, checking the roads change. They're picking up data from multiple sources, highway sources, you name it. So many countries have got cameras. All of the stuff gets fed both into and out of Google across the planet. And we're seeing more and more of this being managed and handled and used to make a seamless, easy trip. You want to go to X with live traffic data and all of this stuff happening. And when last did you get a bill for using maps or traveling? Yes, you can buy paid services like TomTom, and many of them do offer a couple of little enhancements that are maybe worth the money. Certainly, if you go to the old, you know, the core thing around when we had those little GPS units you had to pay for before the smartphone became ubiquitous, before Google became ubiquitous. They've now moved into much more esoteric stuff. You're talking about with Garmin's. You're talking about mapping for sea, mapping for climbing mountains, that sort of stuff, and they're making money out of that. But again, more and more of that is coming to Google for free. So there seems to be a major push to break up Google in some way, get them to spin off some of these services, like Mail, Google Mail, ubiquitous. Tons and tons of people use it. Their chat services, in fact, what I'm talking to you on Meet, which is their video chat service. So many, many services that Alphabet and their Google subsidiaries do. The problem is it is anti-competitive by its very nature. It's a scale business of epic proportions. Just the cost of running the backend servers that stores all this data, searches all this data, and does it instantly. I mean, for the most part, if you have a decent internet connection, you don't wait long for any information. And the way they do that, which is again a very interesting story, is that in South Africa, the entire Google database, or certainly a good portion of it, is stored locally. So you don't have to wait for the signal or for your request to go all the way to America, come all the way back. It's better part of half a second to get the stuff there and back. It's stored locally on servers that are in Johannesburg, Pretoria, Stellenbosch, Cape Town, doesn't matter where, but it's instant. You don't even notice. You do a search, up pops the information, you carry on living your life and doing what you do. When you're traveling, I love Waze. It tells me, oh, we found a better route based on real-time live information. Simply reroutes you and off you go and do what you have to. So if those services were spun out in a way that they broke up originally Microsoft and many others, some of the big telcos, it could create a situation where these services become vastly more expensive and vastly less useful, because simply the scale of having it all together, all this information put together, all of it being able to be stored on one platform in one place would, you know, has certain efficiencies. Unfortunately, it has created a massive monopoly. There's just no question that Alphabet and the Google stack of various things, now including AI, are creating these massive monopolies. However, one of the things that, again, legislation and many of these legislative and sort of controlling bodies forget is that technology in and of itself keeps evolving. So Google search and everything related to the Google data that have been built over the last 10 years or 15 years since everything became ubiquitous has become a virtual monopoly. It's very difficult to beat them. Microsoft's become a monopoly in the desktop and in the office sort of utility space. Google has definitely become the de facto search and mapping and email monopoly for the most part in the Western world. Obviously, in China, that doesn't apply. They've got their own pretty much straight ripoffs of everything that Google ever did. And in some cases, I think they've surpassed them in certain elements. But China is the great Chinese firewall, keeps that separate from us. Hard for us to see, hard for them to see us. So many things are changing in that space as well. But breaking up Google at this point may be too little too late, because ChatGPT, OpenAI, all these AI platforms and the way that people are behaving in terms of finding the information on the web is fundamentally shifting in a most remarkable way. Now, obviously, Google's AI and Meta's AI and Microsoft's AI will favor their own services and information links first. However, as these AIs become more and more open, they start connecting to more and more services, which they are, and they're starting to search the web and to use the information stored in the web in a much more democratic way, they are going to slowly but surely reduce the capacity for a player like Google to completely own the internet. And that, for me, is an excellent thing. But also, you can't lose sight of the fact that by having this monopoly, having this data in the first place has enabled the AI to grow. So it always becomes an incredibly difficult and complex and somewhat difficult area to play in. But there's a lot of new acts, and this is part of why right now a lot of the AI, Apple AI, some of the Meta AI stuff, some of the XAI stuff, as well as certain elements of the Google AI platforms, are not available in Europe because of the new digital acts that are coming in, that have been in force. And there's so many changes, so many considerations to be made. They have to be extremely careful not to appear to be a monopoly and play open cards with everyone. Again, that legislation is going to replicate slowly but surely across the world. GDPR was the first in many cases, and that has now grown to the digital POPIAs in South Africa and many others in Australia, America, Canada. In fact, most countries, even England, as not being part of the EU, has got its own version of GDPR now. So data privacy, data security, and everything to do with your access and your information that you allow others to access is going to become a bit of a hotbed of how we look after our own presence online and how much information is available about anything. But all those useful services that you have on your phone right now that you take totally for granted, ultimately, if this push comes to shove, will become much more fragmented, maybe slightly less connected, and certainly in that case, a lot less useful. You won't have full information. If you had to then start granular, and this is the other unintended consequence, is that if these break up into separate little companies and there's no economies of scale, the costs have to go up. Multiple tenants on a database creates a whole lot of billing and administrative issues. You would land up having to pay. Oh, you want mapping? That's one price. Oh, you want mapping with real-time updates? That's another price. Oh, you want mapping with the real-time traffic? That's another charge. And before you know it, you'll be paying for a service that was ultimately free. Nothing's free. As I say, in most cases, you're the product. They're using you and your information to sell you advertising. And then they make tons of money to sell to advertisers the access to your data in an incredibly granular space. But I, for one, find that if you're careful and you understand this, you actually can find out so many interesting things because none of us know everything that's available. And sometimes there is something available you really like to know about. And the only way you ever find out about it is when Google smartly serves you a couple of adverts because you happen to be looking for XYZ, whatever that XYZ thing is. And suddenly up will pop something that you hadn't seen or didn't think about or just weren't aware of. So advertising in and of itself is not entirely a bad thing. So watch this space. I think we're going to see some huge changes coming to the search industry. As I said, many people are using the OpenAI apps or simply using some form of ChatGPT to do their searching, to do their research. Instead of you scrolling through and downloading 50 PDFs, you simply ask ChatGPT to go through XYZ information, summarize it, and present it to you in a succinct format. So it can do pricing, it can do research, it can do anything. And that is unbelievably powerful. And that is going to change search and the ability of search to know what's going on in your particular browsing and search history in very, very different ways. So let's hope legislation and its unintended consequences don't interfere with some of these cool services we don't pay for right now. If they do, we're going to end up paying a lot of money for things we take totally for granted. And it may even reduce the utility of these platforms and systems going forward. So I'll try to keep you informed on this because I think there's some interesting stuff happening. And on that note, quick break for our sponsors, and I'll be back with some interesting insight into the latest iPhones that have been out for a couple of weeks.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
South Africa was lucky, or well, lucky, fortunate, however you want to see it. We're in the wave one of the iPhone 16 launch window. So a week after announcements, they were available in South Africa at very much the same prices as they were in the past, which is great. I mean, the rand has somewhat improved. Sentiment has got a little bit better, and it's reflecting itself in the cost of electronic goodies. And I've been playing with two, the iPhone 16 Pro Max and the iPhone 16 Pro. I'll spend some time on the iPhone 16 in a future episode. But right now, looking at the Pro devices, and the question I get asked, one, is it any better than the iPhone 15? And two, is it worth the upgrade? Those seem to be the two things. Obviously, for tech lunatics like myself, you always upgrade. If there's a 15 and now a 16, you have to have it picked. I call it research, and I have to, you know, have obviously spend time with it to help my listeners, people out there, to make the decisions. And right up front, I will say this is without question the most advanced device I've used in a long time. Fortunately, I'm running the beta, so I've been playing with Apple Intelligence, and I can tell you that the update for Apple Intelligence, or the initial phases of Apple Intelligence, will be out in the with iOS 18.1 in the next few weeks. Expect to see an update to 18.1, which will bring the enhanced Siri. And I must tell you, it's moved from a six-year-old preschooler, or depends where you are in the world, to about a 12-year-old, 15-year-old smart teen. So it's got a lot better, a lot better. And Apple Intelligence is one of the reasons to upgrade to the iPhone 16, either the standard or the Pro. The processor and Apple Intelligence will, and on iOS 18, will be limited to only two models, the iPhone 15 range and the iPhone 16 range. So if you want to really enter the world of built-in and useful AI, such as really enhanced Siri, the ability to search ChatGPT, and many other, I'm not getting into the whole AI, I'm talking about the iPhone devices right now. But the only way you will be able to do that in the Apple ecosystem, even though iOS 18 will be available on, I think, from the 12 all the way up to the 15 and 16, obviously. So only the 15 and 16 get Apple AI. And the gap, again, right up front, if you have an iPhone 15 Pro, there's probably very little reason to upgrade to a 16 at the moment. Yes, the screens are slightly bigger. They've reduced the bevel. In other words, the devices have physically grown a little. The screen size has grown quite noticeably. Unfortunately, the weight of the phones have grown a little. And I must say, not by much, but certainly enough to, you can actually feel that they're slightly heavier than the previous iPhone 15. I'm talking about the Pro Max now and the Pro. Both of them are fractionally heavier, but the benefit is the battery life has improved dramatically on both, which is always a good thing. The phones are definitely faster. The screens are excellent overall, and the cameras have improved somewhat. But on a straightforward side-by-side basis, and I've got the two of them right here with me right now, the 15 and the 16 Pro Max, there is visually very little difference. You can hardly see the difference if you look at the devices. And physically and electronically and technically, the jump is not massive. You get used to the speed very quickly, and it becomes something you don't even notice. The camera is marginally better. But there is one thing that has really, I believe, been a big improvement. There is a dedicated shutter slide button. It's not really a button. It's more of a control. But on the right-hand side, below the power button, there now is a very interesting shutter and camera control button. If you just push it hard, up pops the camera no matter where you are, and you can then half push it to pick up a whole lot of the other functions and scroll through. It takes a little bit of getting used to, a little bit of fiddling around till you get it, and that is available on the entire iPhone 16 range. Also, what they've done is the 16 Pro and the Pro Max are feature and technology identical. That wasn't the case. The Pro Max always had an edge on the Pro, but now for the first time on the 16 range, they are absolutely identical in every single aspect. And if you've got anything below a 15, 11, 12, 13, or even a 14 Pro Max or Pro, and you want to up, and you are looking at an upgrade, you've had your phone for 2 years, the jump from a 14 Pro to a 16 Pro is significant. Faster, bigger screen, much better battery life, better camera. In all respects, it's just a slicker, better, well worthwhile your upgrade. If you take advantage of some of the trade-in options, it's not a huge, huge, huge jump. The simple fact is these are expensive phones. They're in the 30,000 Rand range, even though the prices haven't dropped by much. But the Pro Max definitely gives you a bigger screen, better battery life, without, as I said, any real functional difference between the two. So it's a matter of size and whether you want a bigger screen or not. I find a bigger screen useful. A lot of people don't. A lot of people prefer a much smaller screen. And I will say one thing, the Pro Max at 6.9 inches and the slightly increased weight definitely makes it less, it's a two-handed phone, it makes it a little bit less comfortable to hold long term, and it just feels hefty and weighs a lot. So it may not be worth the money, and the memory configurations are the same, the cameras are the same. In all respects, it's simply a choice between a smaller screen and a bigger screen with exactly the same overall performance and almost the same experience overall. So those are the two choices as far as the two iPhones go. So, oh, I see our time is running away. We have to have a quick break. I'll wrap up this review in 1 minute straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Oh, welcome back. And quick wrap up of the iPhone 16 Pro and Pro Max. Certainly, titanium, superb screen, brilliant cameras, overall running iOS 18 with Apple Intelligence coming in iOS 18.1, only on the 15 and 16. If you have a 15, I would say this is an upgrade you can skip. Really, you won't notice much difference at all. Though the jump from the 16 Pro to the 15 Pro to the 16 Pro is a little bit bigger. There's a bit more, as I said, parity between the Pro and the Pro Max in the 16 range. But again, anything below the 14 and below, it's well worth the upgrade. The pricing of a 16 Pro starts at around about 28,999. I love that, 29,000 Rand. I would suggest for the 256 gigabyte, I wouldn't suggest you get anything less than that. 128, you can function. But once you've downloaded a few apps and you've got a couple of videos and photos on your phone, you run out of memory really quickly. A 250 gig is the sweet spot. 512 is great, but it starts getting super expensive. It's 34,000 Rand from 29,000 Rand. And the 1 terabyte option jumps to nearly 40,000 Rand, which is a little bit steep for 10,000 Rand just for a 512 gigs of memory. But that's always been a bit of a Microsoft thing. Apple thing. Excuse me, Apple won't enjoy me if I do that. So if you're a fan, great device. Certainly the best they've ever built. Obviously, it's their latest, the new technology. The process is fantastic. The cameras are brilliant. The camera functionality is incredible. The pro possibilities for video are spectacular. So if you're in the ecosystem, this is the device to have. If you're looking to upgrade, if you've got a 14 below, makes a lot of sense. Now, moving on to the last little heads up, because there's a lot of talk going around this, and it's been a major bugbear for all of us in South Africa for many, many years now. And that is the whole story of your driver's license. There's one machine. It's 29, nearly 30 years old, and in technology and anything today, anything that's nearly 30 years old is basically prehistoric. It should be in a museum. And it's caused enormous ructions over the last few years with driver's licenses. And we were promised that a brand new fancy driver's license that would have full technological backup, so you would get it on your phone, you'd have an e-driver's license, was coming in 2024. Well, sadly, do not hold your breath. They ultimately sent out a tender to a company in France that would produce 3 machines that would be available in South Africa to make the new driver's licenses. And guess what? Unfortunately, this company, IDEMIA, has been involved in all sorts of fraud and corruption and other things. And the tender, which finally landed up being a billion rand for three printers, is pretty insane, has now run into all sorts of problems along with BEE and many other things. So unfortunately, it doesn't look like we are going to see new driver's licenses, certainly not e-driver's licenses, in the next short while, maybe a year or two. So you're just going to have to carry on figuring things out. The other sad thing is they did mention they would move the driver license renewal time to 8 years, which is more in line with global trends. But they've decided for now to keep it at 5 years because they've it's a bit of a money spinning thing, but it's a catch 22. You know, if they wouldn't have to spend the money on the staffing if they took it to 8 years, and it's just craziness. So sadly, there's definitely a problem. We're not going to see our fancy e-driver's licenses anytime soon, and let's hope they just get their act together and get on with this. There's been some good movement in Home Affairs, so let's see if we can finally get this one sorted. It's really not a big deal. And on that note, I'm afraid that I have to wrap up. Our time is through, and I'll be back soon, as same place, same time, right here on High FM.